Blog Talk Radio. Good morning, this is Denise Griffiths, and I am your partner in success. Today, we will be talking to Ford Myers, and normally I have kind of a lengthy introduction that takes place. We just don't have time for that today. Ford is very, very busy, and his call is just too important for me to be chatting too much. So today, we're going to be talking again to Ford Myers. This is a follow-up call from the last time we talked about 2 weeks ago. Ford is the author of Get the Job You Want, Even When No One's Hiring. How timely is that book? I mean, given the state of the economy, given the state of jobs that are being lost, this book, and I've told this to Ford, I think he looked into the future when he was writing this. This book was written about, I think, a year or so ago, and was just recently published, so he was right on target. I had so many questions about the job market, career counseling, and career success that we simply did not have time to cover them all on the last call. So Ford very kindly consented to a second interview, and I appreciate that very much. The response to the first interview was overwhelming, as again, this is a very timely topic, and Ford's new book, Get the Job You Want, Even When No One's Hiring, is so very important. So today we have the opportunity to hear Ford speak to the problems that so many people are experiencing in finding a new job during a down economy, especially after a job loss. So this is a very important interview, and I invite you to download it and listen to it often after the call concludes. There's going to be a lot of information that you just won't pick up the first go-round. Excuse me. So last week we discussed what the number one secret to job search success is. And if you missed that call, you can find it on my Blog Talk Radio link, which has been posted in the chat room. So Ford, welcome to the show again. And I really thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you, Denise. I'm very happy to be speaking to you again.
Well, it's been a problem getting you back on because you're so very busy and you're so much in demand, and I really appreciate you taking the time. And I know that today's interview is going to be very intensive and fairly short, as you need to leave the show a tad early.
Mm-hmm.
So congratulations on your book.
Oh, thank you again.
Oh, it's a great book. I've read the sample chapter. Please tell our audience where they can get a free sample chapter.
Oh, sure. If they go to my website, which is careerpotential.com, they'll see a big picture of the book cover. If they just click on that book cover, it'll take them to another web page where they can register and get the three bonuses that you described. And that, again, is
that link
careerpotential.com.
Okay, I actually just posted that, the book bonus. I just posted that in the chat room.
Great, thank you.
So, Ford, tell us about yourself. This is just going to kind of be a recap from our last call. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to become an author and, more importantly, a career expert.
Okay. Well, I'll keep this brief because it'll be a little bit of a recap, as you said. But I went into the career consulting and career development field many, many years ago after working in another industry. So I am myself a career changer, and I know what it's like to go through that transition. I struggled myself with a lot of career choices and career identity when I was much younger, so I really bring a lot of empathy and understanding to the process of finding one's way into a satisfying career. I actually went back to school at the ripe old age of 38 and got a graduate degree in human resource development, and I was able to get a job in what's called the outplacement field, and that simply means the field of when a company is downsizing or laying off, they hire an outplacement company to provide the career transition services for their employees. It's kind of like a benefit that they provide as the employees are being laid off. And I worked at those firms, the three largest firms in the world, over a period of about 12 years. And then in 2000 and something, I can't remember even anymore, I started my own business called Career Potential. And the goal was, of course, to provide a higher level of service and more customized, personalized attention to each client. In this process, Denise, I began to create a lot of materials and do quite a lot of writing and speaking. And when I saw what was happening with the job market and the economy, I was able to consolidate, essentially, consolidate a lot of my thoughts and a lot of my pieces into a book called Get the Job You Want Even When No One's Hiring. And, of course, the book title is very apropos because it talks specifically about how to manage your career and how to look for a job specifically under these circumstances, these unprecedented circumstances right now in the economy and the job market. So there's no other book quite like this, and I'm very proud and happy that it's finally out.
Don't you feel like something of a guru? You saw it coming.
Well,
I'm amazed.
I don't know if it's so much guru. I just have my finger on the pulse of what's going on. You know, I speak to a lot of clients. I speak to a lot of companies because we also do corporate work as well as individual work. And I hear the inside story. And so it's like having your ear to the ground and just being able to pick up these hints a little sooner than other people might.
Well, the book title is just astonishing. A year ago, this may have, it would have been a good book no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
I've read the excerpt. It's an amazing excerpt, but I have to tell you, the timing on this is just phenomenal.
Well, thanks. I am very pleased, and I'm glad that it can be of help and of service to people who are struggling so much in this unprecedented time.
Well, there's no question about it. So the last time we spoke, we covered a lot of material. I had a lot of questions,
mm-hmm.
and let me just recap really quickly. One of the things that we talked about was your 15 years in career coaching experience and consultations, and what the major mistake you continually see that job seekers make. Then we moved on to, and this just floored me, that you said the resume is your least important tool, and that, I have to say, just kind of had me going, what? And once you explained it, I went, okay, I truly understand. But you had to explain it to me, and it was so simple.
Sure.
And it was such a common sense response that I scratched my head saying, well, yeah, he's absolutely right. Then we talked about what is the number one secret to job search success. And we went on to, in a down economy, many people who are laid off due to cutbacks are looking at the situation and thinking, oh, my God, this should not be happening to me. I've got this wonderful education. I've got master's degrees. I've got, you know, I work so hard. I don't deserve this. And we talked about that. Then we went on to what are the first five things that someone should immediately do after being laid off from their job. That one is a huge, huge question that I get from people.
Did we really cover all that within 1 hour?
We did.
That's a lot.
We did. And people need to go back and listen to that initial interview. I get people saying, thank you. That was so wonderful. Thank you for having forward because you explained to them that they should not go home and eat ice cream. That they should not go home and just bury themselves in a bucket of fried chicken, that there are certain steps that they need to take, and, you know, getting depressed is not one of them.
Right, and not go home and blast out 500 resumes in the first 2 hours.
Exactly, exactly. And I remember thinking, well, but that's what everybody does, and of course that's not what you should do. Then we talked about what the first three steps someone should take to identify their ideal job, and I'm pretty sure we covered what is the best way to solicit recommendation letters. So now we're going on to, I had a ton of questions, and I'm going to talk fast here. My next question for you is, how do you create a network, and a serious network, whether it's local or whether it's online?
Mm-hmm.
How do you create a network after working in the same job? Let's just pick AT&T.
Mm-hmm.
I personally know somebody who started with AT&T when she got out of high school. She worked there for 25 years and then lost her job.
Mm.
So what do you do? How do you create a network after you've been entrenched in the same business model, if you will,
right,
after so very long?
Right. Well, that's a good question, and unfortunately, it's a situation that many people find themselves in. What you're really saying, though, is that they didn't develop and grow and maintain their network while they were working in that job. In other words, what happened in your friend's case is that the job ended and she had no network. She had not spent time nourishing that network and building it up over those 25 years. If she had, she'd be in a very, very different situation. So the real answer to your question is to step back and say that a person should be developing a network continually throughout their entire career from the minute they start working until the minute they stop working. And it doesn't matter if you change jobs 10 times or change companies 50 times, or even if you stay in the same job for 25 years. your biggest job of all is to manage your career, and part of that is to continually develop and nourish your network. Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about your friend who unfortunately didn't know how to do that. So here she is, 25 years later, separated from her job, and she has virtually no network. And so where does one begin? Well, you begin at the beginning. And what that means is, even though she may not have been focusing on building a professional network, she certainly knows people. She certainly has friends. She certainly has coworkers from the old job. She has neighbors. She has people she might have gone to school with, or that she goes to religious service with, or, you know, community involvement, or whatever it may be. So she has to start at the very beginning, which is her address book. If she goes to her own address book and just looks at the friends that she has, the contacts, the colleagues, vendors, suppliers, consultants, everyone in her circle, everyone in her entire orbit, those
family
are
friends.
The people, family, friends, of course.
No.
That's where you begin. Now, what some people say is, but they don't understand my business, or they don't know anything about my field, or they don't even know what I do for a living. All those things are irrelevant, because everybody knows people, and you can't prejudge, you can't assume who knows whom, and who will help you, and who won't help you. What you need to do simply, what she needs to do, is to make a list of all the people she does know, and their phone numbers, and their emails, and then put together a brief strategy to reach out to all these people and ask for help in a very appropriate and a very businesslike manner. And, of course, we have a whole protocol, a whole step-by-step sequence that is very productive and gets good results.
And that's in your book?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay.
You know, it's something that people need to learn, and it's really not that complicated. It's just not. If someone just puts their mind to it and reads and studies and practices this, in a matter of days, they can be building a really great network and starting to reach out to folks who can help them.
Do you think sometimes people are laid off and they feel a sense of shame, which to me is ridiculous? But I think people do. They get depressed. And they don't want to reach out because they're embarrassed. Do you think that happens?
No, it happens. Absolutely true. Definitely. However, we have to be realistic about this. We have to be objective. Let's look at the facts. You know, the job market being what it is, the economy being what it is, as I said before, these are unprecedented times and extremely challenging. Everybody knows someone who's been laid off or downsized out of a job, whether it's you or a spouse or a friend or neighbors. Nobody gets out alive, okay? Nobody is unscathed. Everybody is impacted by what's going on in the economy and the job market. And so some of the shame that may have existed in the past, say 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, really shouldn't occur anymore, because everybody knows what's going on. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows how many people are being impacted. And in my world, there really is virtually no shame about this anymore. There's no reason to go home and hide in a corner in a fetal position. There's no reason to be self-destructive. There's no reason to blame yourself. In fact, what I find is that when people talk about the fact that they were laid off, the response they're typically going to get is one of great empathy and understanding, not one of rejection and shaming and blaming.
So in other words, the perception has shifted.
Completely.
And you should shift with it.
Totally, yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Again, Denise, it's not a good thing. It's not what I would wish on anyone. But if it is going to happen, we have to be objective and not personalize this. It's just a fact of business. And so we have to move on.
And I think that's what happens. People don't really understand that it is a business decision. You're not being laid off because you have bad breath. And you're being
right.
laid off because
right.
it's a business decision. And I think once people understand that, they can come out of that, go, oh my gosh, you know, I think I'm going to eat chocolate all day.
Yeah.
So in a bad market, how do you reprioritize to meet the goals that you may have set during a better economic environment? Because now everything is different. So how do you sit down and reprioritize?
Well, I think that you should not change your priorities. I think you need to keep your objectives clear, keep your goals in mind, I mean, unless your industry has disappeared, keep your goals or maybe adjust them slightly, but don't abandon your goals and objectives. You've worked too hard and you've thought too long about what you really want to do with your career, so don't let all those things just slide away. However, realities being what they are, you have to look at your industry objectively and say, are there still going to be opportunities in my field or is it going away? So, for example, years ago, there was an industry called typesetting, the typesetting industry, and people made newspapers and books and magazines, and the type was set to create the letters in these documents.
It was manually set.
Manually set, exactly.
Right.
And that was a very nice field for many, many years, and a lot of people enjoyed it and made a decent living. Well, hello, you know, when the computer came around and desktop publishing and then digital design and now everything is computer-based, that entire industry literally disappeared. And some might say that the newspaper industry now similarly is disappearing. So you have to look at your industry and ask yourself clearly and objectively, is it going away? And if it is, then I need to perhaps get some new training and some new education. But if it's not going away, then stick to your goals, stick to your priorities, and just regroup. So, you know, in a sense, you have to analyze the situation on the outside before you can make decisions on the inside.
So you're basically saying that you need to sit down and take a very clear, honest, in other words, shine a white light on your career goals and your industry and make sure that you're not just trying to go after the same type of position that you've just been comfortable in for a long time.
No, you're exactly right.
You may need training. You may need a shift in consciousness, if you will.
Yes. In fact, at our last during our last conversation, we spoke about this concept of doing a career inventory, which means if you're losing your job and you have to start thinking about what you're going to do next, the first thing to do, as I said, is not send out 500 resumes, but instead to sit down and really think and do a internal career inventory. Also do an external analysis of the market and the industry you're in, and then you can begin to put together a new plan. Certainly a plan is needed, whether it's the same plan or an updated plan. You need a plan, you need a strategy, you need a blueprint.
And this really, I know a lot of online entrepreneurs. That's basically where I work is online.
Mm-hmm.
We're having the same issues. We really are.
And In what way?
Even though we don't work traditionally, mm-hmm. we're finding that some things that may have worked for us even a year ago, just those opportunities are gone.
I see.
So, you know, we're having to keep up with, oh gosh, let's just talk about websites. Websites used to be, if you had a website and you could drive traffic to it, you were doing a great job, but you had to use, let's say, Google AdWords, and you had to really work at driving that traffic. Now the shift is towards WordPress platform, and we have to learn to do those things. So
mm-hmm.
we can look at our industry, we can look at different things that are going on, but boy, we better be really willing and able to make that right turn in our
Yeah. heart. I see your point, yes.
So, you know, the bit of the book that I have read, and I can't wait to get my full copy, not only addresses traditional jobs, but in my view also addresses entrepreneurs.
Oh, yes.
So
it addresses
excellent book.
Entrepreneurs, consultants, freelancers, part-time workers, full-time workers, even people who choose to do a bridge job, what I call a bridge job, which means something to carry you over mm-hmm. until you get your next real job, even if the bridge job is not, your final destination.
Right. And a lot of, you know, people are taking contract positions right now.
Yes.
As, you know, a result of taxes and different things that are going on. And
right. And that's fine.
You also address that.
Yes. All those things are fine. However, like I said before, you don't want to get stuck long-term in a bridge job. You don't want to lose sight of your goals and your objectives. So there are interim steps to get you to your goal. That's fine. But ultimately, we're talking about a long-term plan.
I agree. So in previous conversations that we have had, you advocate creating a survival toolkit.
Right.
And you say that accomplishment stories, which I love this. We chatted really kind of briefly about this in our last interview. But you say that accomplishment stories are the most important element of your survival toolkit. So explain what an accomplishment story is as opposed to a resume,
mm-hmm.
and why is this so important these days?
Okay. Well, first let me say that you mentioned the job seekers' survival toolkit. That's a very, very important part of the book. The book really is not just a book. It's a whole system. And when people read the book, they will see a link to a very robust, extremely valuable online resource. It's just fabulous. It has many, many, many links, tools, documents, templates, websites, all kinds of things that I think, frankly, go far beyond the value of the paper book itself. But to answer your question more directly, the accomplishment stories are a very key part of this survival toolkit. And the reason that they're so important is that they really explain clearly to the employer what you have achieved and how you think and how you operate and how you add value. You see, anybody can look at a resume and they can say, oh, okay, so Denise worked here and Denise worked there and she had this job title and she had that job title and that's very nice and she has a good education. But you know what? That falls flat, because what the employer really wants to know is, what can you do for me? What can you do for me today? So especially in this job market right now, in this economy, employers are only asking that one question: what can you do for me today? And the accomplishment stories, that's the perfect tool to answer that question. The accomplishment story really talks about what you do that's over and above the job responsibilities. Where do you really shine? Where do you add incredible value? Okay, where do you take personal initiative? And where can you prove tangible positive results? That's what the accomplishment story does. And I'll tell you something, there's a huge difference between a person who's trained to use accomplishment stories and a person who isn't. Basically, the person who doesn't use accomplishment stories will leave the interview usually having a nice chat, but there won't be that real connection. It won't really answer the employer's burning question. But if you do master the idea and the skill of using accomplishment stories, what will happen is you'll leave the interview with the employer saying, this is great, when can you come back? When can you join us? Mm-hmm. What's it going to take to bring you on board? I want you to meet with the president of the company. Wait here. You know, these are the kinds of things you hear from the employer when a candidate skillfully uses their accomplishment stories.
So you're able to go into an interview and quantify your experience.
You can quantify it, you can prove it, you can also make a direct connection between the achievements that you've enjoyed in the past and what you can contribute to the prospective employer. Without making that direct one-to-one connection, your entire interview, in my opinion, will fall flat.
Frankly, I see that in my industry all the time, constantly. Mm-hmm. So one of the questions that I have in a chat room is, and they read this on one of our postings, that you say that every company is hiring all of the time. I posted this on Facebook.
Right.
And I posted it all over the place because I found that just fascinating. So the question is, how do you approach a company about a job when they're not advertising? And who do you call?
Well, I'm going to turn that question around because I want to reframe it. What I would say is try to avoid applying to posted and advertised positions, no matter what the economy is, and only go after companies through your network. I shouldn't say only. Let's say 98%, okay? 98% of your efforts should be not toward advertised positions, but toward unpublished positions or positions that are just beginning to come to the fore before they're widely known. So economy, whether it's bad or good, the first thing people have to understand is that networking is the name of the game. And so I don't really care if a company is advertising for positions. In fact, it sort of bothers me if they're advertising for positions, because I don't want to go after the same jobs everybody else is going after. I want to go after unique situations where I and only I can meet the specific needs of the company. You can only uncover that kind of intelligence through networking.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's who you know, not what you know.
Yeah. And look, you have a choice. Do you want to be one of 1,000 candidates on a pile of resumes that probably won't get read anyhow? Do you want to be in a competitive situation where they're going to screen you according to salary and screen you according to what color tie you wear or what kind of dress you wear? I would rather go into a company as the only candidate. I'd rather go in as a solutions provider, not as a job applicant. And that's a huge difference in mindset.
Yes, it is. And I'm glad you identified it that way. Can you say that again?
Yeah. Don't go into a job as an applicant. Go in to an interview as a problem solver. So stop acting like an applicant. Start acting like a solution provider. This is a big shift.
It's so important.
Yeah. Let me give you one example, which I may have mentioned in the last interview. I'm not sure. But when my clients go in for an interview, they say something that might sound very strange to your listeners. Instead of sitting down and just politely answering questions that the interviewer throws at them, here's what happens. They sit down, they shake hands, they go through all the niceties and hello and how are you and all that. And then the first thing out of my candidate's mouth is, so how can I be of help to you today? Or how may I be of service? Now that completely changed the dynamic of the interview. From that single sentence, the entire conversation shifts. Compare that to the typical applicant who sits down nervous with their hands folded in their lap, waiting to be barraged with tough questions. They're on
they're
the defensive,
there as a supplicant rather than an applicant.
Right, yeah, it's just not good. It's not good.
Well, it's a bad, I don't want to say karma, but it really sets a tone for the interview, doesn't it?
That's right, it does.
When somebody is there, like you say, with their hat on their hand or as a supplicant, and you know that they're just in a panic mode.
Yep, and they're desperate.
They're trying to help you.
They're desperate.
And desperation has its own scent. It really does.
It does. And so my clients go in as a confident candidate. They know their value. They can express and articulate their value and their skills extremely well. And they go in to uncover problems and to then return with solutions. That's an unbeatable combination.
No question about it. So let's get back to networking just a little bit.
Sure.
What is the best way to build rapport when networking? And that, from what I'm understanding with you, is in person, it's online, it's you know, just through recommendations or referrals. What is the best way to build rapport?
The best way to build rapport, clearly, is through common interests. So all the networking should be done through people whom you both know mutually. So in other words, networking is not picking up the phone and saying, hello, Mr. Smith, you don't know me, but my name is Denise. Da, da, da. That's not networking. Networking is, hello, Mr. Smith. Hi, I was referred to you by Denise Griffiths. She's a person I know you've worked with very closely, and actually I've worked with her too. We have a very good working relationship, and I was talking to her recently, and she strongly suggested I give you a call because dot, 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 dot. So now what you've done is you've established a common bond, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're always going through...
In a perfect world, Denise Griffiths would have already gotten in touch with this person.
Yes, that's also true.
Make the call.
That's also true. So it's not a cold call. It's a warm call. It's a referral call, and that's much, much easier. Also, remember that the person on the other end of the phone has a relationship with the person who did the referring. So they have a sense of obligation or even guilt. They have to accommodate you because if they don't, it'll get back to the... Yeah, it's in their own interest. It's in the relationship interest.
Right. Well, and honestly, if somebody is saying, listen, you need to talk with Ford Myers or you need to talk with Denise Griffiths, I find in my world that most of the work has been done for me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that referral is so strong and it is so impassioned in all, many cases that, you know, referrals are not given lightly where I come from. You do not refer somebody unless you truly believe that they are a really great candidate for whatever it is that you're looking for. So I find, and I'm sure that you found this and your candidates have found this, once that referral is made, that may be one of the most important things that happens in that interview.
Absolutely. It's a wonderful way to begin a relationship and a dialogue without the typical pressure, without the typical feeling of, oh, obligation, I have to talk to this idiot and it's going to waste my time. No, it's not like that. It's more like, oh, okay, if you're a friend of so-and-so's, then yeah, I'd be happy to talk to you.
Right. I've been waiting to hear from you.
Yes. And the other way to do this is to make it very clear to the other person on the phone that you are not calling them to ask them for a job. So networking is not about bugging people for jobs. Networking is about asking for help, advice, guidance, support. That's what networking is about. It's about two human beings just reaching out and being of help to one another. And it should be mutual. Networking is not about taking and taking. Networking is about giving and giving. And so our approach to networking is always about seek what you can give before seeking what you can get.
And I love that, because it is true when you're networking, and I find this with online entrepreneurs, I find this with brick and mortar entrepreneurs, we're generous people.
Mm-hmm.
We genuinely want to help. I think it's the American way.
Help. I think most people want to help. Most people want to be supportive and generous. You just have to give people half a chance. And a large part of this is how you approach them. So in other words, I've had people say to me, networking doesn't work. I tried it, and no one would talk to me. Okay, well, that's an interesting comment. But then
if
you have to ask,
just like that, I can see why.
Yeah, you have to ask, well, why, and what did this person do, and how did they act, and what did they say that yielded this negative response? I can promise you that if I can get my hands on that person, and if I can reorient them in a better way of networking, I can assure you that their response will be 100% different than what they're used to. In other words, it's your responsibility, not the other person's responsibility. If you're not getting the kind of response you want through networking, there's only one person responsible for that, and that's you.
How do you I've had this happen, and
mm-hmm.
I've had people say exactly the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
How do you overcome that negativity with these people? Because it really does happen, and I've heard, I started chuckling when you said, well, you know, I've done this and it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
I started laughing because I've heard exactly that same tone. So
mm-hmm.
many
oh, yeah. It's a negative mindset.
Exactly. And I want to say, well, if you spoke to me or anybody you're trying to network with in the tone that you just spoke with me, I'd hang up on you.
Exactly.
Really,
so who's responsible? It's not the other person. It's themselves. And how do you overcome the negativity? Well, it takes some work. It takes really sharing with the other person an entirely different perspective, a whole other reality. And, you know, there are some people who are coachable. Sorry?
You can't get until you give.
That's right.
It's a very simple prospect.
That's right. And we have to also, what I do is I let them speak to other clients of mine who are having infinitely better results with networking, because they believe it more when they speak to another person who's going through the same experience as compared mm-hmm. to hearing it directly from me. So I will literally introduce one client to another, maybe one client's a little farther along than the other and having better results than the other, but that immediately shifts. In that case, the candidate really gets clear that there's something that they're not doing correctly, and they understand they have to change their behavior if they hope to get different results.
So you put together some little mini masterminds, in fact.
Sometimes I do that, yes. And even
Perfect.
If it's just a phone call with
mm-hmm.
another client, that helps. So I can explain it, and sometimes that works fine. But if it's a particularly challenging situation, I will introduce my client to another client, and then that always does the job.
I can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of networking.
That's right.
Yes. I mean, you may not be directly networking to get a particular job, but you're getting advice, you're getting counsel, you're getting help from other people.
Right.
And that allows you to carry that forward, or pay it forward, if you will, and give that same advice and counsel to other people. It all comes back. I really do believe it comes back. So let's move on. Why do you recommend that the best way to get a job is not to look for a job? And I know a lot of people are saying, what?
Mm-hmm.
So how can someone out of work, and God knows there are so many people out of work right now, put this idea or theory into practice without living in a state of just perpetual anxiety?
Mm-hmm.
Explain that one.
Okay, sure. I always say to people, the best way to get a job is to not look for a job. And just like my comment about how the resume is your least important tool, people always look at me funny, and then I explain myself, and then they totally get it. They just go, oh, now, yeah, you're right. So let me explain this one. Again, let's go back to my previous comment about a job seeker applicant person versus a solution provider sort of person. Nobody likes a job seeker, okay? Nobody likes a desperate job seeker. You might as well go around saying you have leprosy, because that's about how appealing you are to employers when you are going around desperately seeking a job and acting like a desperate applicant.
Yeah,
so we have to change. It's very unattractive. It's very unappealing. And they can smell your desperation a mile away.
Yep.
So instead, what's needed is a different mindset. And the mindset, as I said before, is look instead for opportunities for you to provide valuable solutions. And so this means through the networking or through reading articles or research of any kind, you can find where companies have challenges and issues. They have problems that need to be solved. And so that means not acting like an applicant, but instead offering value, offering solutions. And even in this crazy job market right now, the clients of mine who are most successful and getting jobs most quickly and most successfully are the ones who are following this philosophy. They're not sitting at home applying for jobs all day long. They're not standing in line at companies putting in paper applications. They're not standing in job fairs with 5,000 other candidates running around with their resumes in their hands. What they're doing instead is they're getting under the radar. They're looking at who has problems, who has needs, who has challenges that they might be able to address. So they're not even looking for a job, at least not directly. Yes, they're looking indirectly, but what happens, Denise, is that they might get into a great networking discussion with a company, and then the company says, gee, you really sound like you have a handle on our situation. Would you be willing to come back and talk to us about providing some value, some solutions, perhaps? So what just happened? What happened is that a connection was made, and hardly the word job was ever mentioned. So this is what works, especially
solution
in today's world.
It's solution rather than job.
Yeah, exactly right. And once a person gets this through their head, they never go back. Once they understand this approach, it's like they suddenly turn. It's like someone turned on a light bulb, and before they were wandering around in the dark. You know, you do not want to be one of 5,000 applicants on a pile of resumes. What you want to be instead is a person who is respected and valued for providing outstanding solutions.
Well, and that makes perfect sense, because what happens from the candidate point of view, if they're standing in line, if they're one of, hundreds of stamps that are being thrown through the post office,
That
resume is going to wind up possibly in a file, probably in a shredder. I think that just depresses the candidate more and more and more because they know that they're not being effective.
No, you really put your finger on it, and I'll go one step farther. Let's say you don't know any better, and you're sitting at home all day in your pajamas sending out resumes on Monster.com. Well, of course, you're not getting any response. Of course, you're not getting interviews because basically you're just throwing resumes into a black hole.
Right.
That is certainly going to depress the person because they're going to take it personally. They're going to think, oh, my God, I'm washed up. I'm not a reasonable candidate anymore. Nobody likes me. I'm not going to be invited to the party. It's very depressing. But they're responding to incorrect data. The data is not accurate because nobody's getting responses. I don't care if you're the most qualified, genius person in the world. You're still going to get an incredibly low response rate on job boards. So, once again, it's perception, and perception leads to emotional response, and emotional response can lead to failure or success.
And then when you do accidentally, and it's always an accident, in my opinion, if you do accidentally get one of these interviews from a place like this, you're already just in such a snit. I mean, you're panicked, you're depressed.
Yep.
I mean, you may not have brushed your teeth in 2 days. I mean, I just can't even imagine.
No, it's true.
It has to really play with your mind, and when it's playing with your mind, that does show up in the interview.
It definitely does, and we're talking really about psychological frame of mind. There's a dramatic difference between my clients or people who have been through career training, let's call it, versus people who haven't. They just come off differently. Their whole approach and attitude is different. They just carry a very different attitude, and it's an attitude that's much more productive than the typical desperate job seeker. And look, I understand how people can be feeling desperate.
Okay,
I'm not arguing with that. What I am arguing is, what are you going to do about it, and how are you going to get out of that desperate mindset?
Yeah, who's in control, you or them?
Exactly. Now, you said that networking, when it works, is an accident. And I'm going to challenge you on that a little bit because...
No. I didn't say networking. I'm sorry. I probably misspoke.
Okay. What did you mean?
When you throw one of these resumes out on Monster.com,
oh, yes.
when you accidentally get somebody say, well, sure, come on in. And I have to tell you, it's almost always an insurance company.
Yes, or they want you to sell sell something door to door. Yeah.
Exactly.
No, you're right. You're right.
That's what I meant to say. I might have misspoke.
No, I'm glad you clarified that. But let's talk about this word accident just for a minute. Because even in the networking world, people have said to me, it's so random. You know, you're just talking to this one, you're talking to that one, and you're going down all these wild goose chases, and it never goes anywhere. See, I don't believe that at all.
No,
I look at it totally differently.
Yeah.
I think it's sort of a controlled accident, if you want to call it that. Yes, of course you'll have a couple of wild goose chases. Of course you'll make some phone calls that don't lead anywhere. But if you think of it as a great big funnel, think of it as a giant funnel where you're putting this stuff into the top where the mouth of the funnel is very large, and some of it's going to spill out the sides. But then as it goes down into the tube and then comes out the narrow end, that's where things are productive, because now you're talking to the right people and you manage to navigate to a point where you're having very productive conversations that can actually lead to an offer.
And that's, it's very true with networking, and you may talk with several people, but if you are confident and you know what you're talking about and you know that you have a value proposition and you can articulate that value proposition, they may not have a position for you, but you will remain in their mind.
Yes.
And it may be 3 months down the road and they say, oh my gosh, I was talking with Ford about 3 months ago. I have got to put you in touch with him.
That's exactly right. And in fact,
all the time.
It happens all the time. And in fact, we actually teach a method where candidates keep in touch in a very methodical, systematic way. They keep in touch with everyone with whom they've networked.
Mm-hmm.
And they build and they build. And you're exactly right. They might get an email or a phone call a month and a half later about some new opportunity that arose at that company or a different company. But you've got to stay top of mind. You have to keep in front of the employer's face. And there's a right way to do this.
Impress them so much that
that's
it's always in the back of their mind.
Yes. And you've got to stay in touch because out of sight, out of mind. So
Absolutely.
we have a very appropriate method, a very easy, soft method of staying in touch with these people so that they don't forget about you.
And again, this is in your book, these steps?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I provide enormous detail. You know, I don't leave anything to chance. This book is right down to the smallest detail. Every form, every letter, every question, every answer. It's like a cookbook, okay? It's a prescription. It's a recipe. And it's been honed and refined over the last 15 years. So it works.
Ford, how much is this book?
The book is $19.95. It's a paperback.
Is it so cheap?
Yeah, it's a paperback.
It sounds like it should be a $100 book.
Well, when you add in all the online bonuses especially, I honestly, truly think it's worth thousands. But, you know,
It's
fine. It's good. I'm happy just to get the message out to as many people as possible. So, yeah, it's $19.95. And even on Amazon and places like that, they sell it at a discount.
Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. Well, I can't wait to get my copy of the book. I mean, I really can't because, you know, even though I work completely online, I work with a lot of people from, you know, different spectrums of the job market.
Sure.
In my opinion, everybody that I know, everybody that I network with, everybody that I currently work with, everybody who works for me needs to get a copy of this book. I'm not kidding. I'm really not kidding. I rarely say things that I don't mean. I'm known for not having too many filters.
Right.
So
well, I'm not a real...
Like this, I mean it.
Oh, sure. I understand. And I'm not a hard sell guy either, but let me just say one thing, which is absolutely 100% true. When I tell people about this book, whether I'm at a conference or I'm at a networking meeting or whatever, even if it has nothing to do with my book, if I just mention it, like people say, well, what do you do and what are you doing these days? So I tell them about the book. Every single person has said, oh, that's great. Where can I get a copy? Or they say, oh, my daughter's just graduating from school, from college, and I'd love to give her a copy. Or they say, oh, my brother was just laid off. Can I get a copy so I can get to... So this is not a book about, you know, basket weaving. It's not a book about ancient history. This is a book that is so relevant and topical, and everybody's family can benefit from having a copy.
There's no question.
Yeah.
No question about that.
So I urge people to take a look at it. And you know what's interesting? If they go to my website, careerpotential.com, and click on the book, these bonuses that I'm talking about, let me make something clear. Those bonuses are free whether you buy the book or not. Mm-hmm. So people can download and use the bonuses even if they don't buy the book.
I bought the book and downloaded the
bonuses. Well, that's the ideal solution, yes, of course.
Right.
Yes.
So everybody go to careerpotential.com. There's a picture of the book on the right-hand side of the page. And that's, you click on that book, and you can go there to get the free excerpt of the book. I think it's the first chapter.
Yes.
And you'll get the free bonuses, so go there.
Yes.
So, Fort, I know you're running out of time. I know you.
Yeah, we have about five
more
minutes.
Right.
Yeah,
so
about five more minutes.
Okay. So what is the code? And I'm code in parentheses here.
Mm-hmm.
For creating an outstanding resume, I know that that's not the most critical part of your
research.
But it's important. There's no question about it, and we're not telling people it's not.
Correct.
So what is the strongest resume format that you can recommend?
Okay. For 90% of people, they're going to be using what's called a chronological resume. And that's the standard, typical kind of resume you've always seen, where it lists your jobs going backward in history, starting from the most recent and then going to the one that's the farthest back in time. It usually has a summary at the top, then it has your professional experience, that's where you have all the jobs, and then under that, it would have some variety of options. For example, you can have a section called professional development, and that's where you would put all your workshops, seminars, certifications, and things like that. I forgot education.
Mm-hmm.
After the work history, you put your education, and that's formal education, your academic work. After that is where you can have these options of either professional development, or you could have military, or you could have something called related experience. And there's a couple of different options. Some people even put publications and presentations if they've done a lot of that sort of thing.
That's more of a CV as opposed to a resume, though, isn't it?
Well, I use the terms, frankly, interchangeably.
Okay.
I really do.
Okay.
And try to keep the resume to 2 pages. Every professional who's been out for any number of years should have a resume that's at least 2 pages, not 1 page. And you don't have to put at the bottom of the resume, you don't have to put things like references available upon request. That's a corny old line that isn't needed anymore. And obviously it has to be attractive. It has to be typeset properly, so it looks very consistent and clean. You have to spell check and make sure you're not making any mistakes. But here's one of the biggest tips of all when it comes to resumes. Don't just give me a bullet history of where you worked and when. I want to know your accomplishments. There's that word again. I want to know your accomplishments when you were in that job. So what I'm saying to you, Denise, is that for each job, after you list the title, what you want is a paragraph that briefly explains the roles and responsibilities of the position. So that means whether you have the job or I have the job, it's the same job. Just give me a concise statement, maybe 4 sentences, 5 sentences, about what the job entailed. What were the baseline expectations and responsibilities? But then right under that, I want you the people to indent and give me some bullets. Give me 3, 4, 5 bullets that highlight your specific accomplishments when you're in that job. Where did you really shine? What are you most proud of? Where are your tangible positive results? Where did you go above and beyond the job's responsibilities? That's what the bullet accomplishments are all about. When you have a resume like that, where every single job has the job description and then it has the bullet accomplishments for every single job, that is a resume that will jump off the page and get results.
I agree. Absolutely, I agree with that. Been there, done that from both sides of the aisle.
Yeah.
I know that you have to leave, and I do have more questions for you, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to email these questions to you.
Okay.
And I will post them in my blog because I really don't want to keep you over, and you've been so gracious about being here.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
Well, you give so much information. I mean, I'm just my jaw drops every now and then. I have to tell you, I'm just like, whoa.
All right,
that's pretty cool.
No, I
understand. I have a couple of questions for you still, and one of them is going to be that employers expect you to negotiate. You know, is it true that employers expect you to negotiate? And we're going to discuss that, and are they disappointed if you don't?
The short answer is yes and yes.
Yeah, I thought so. Again, been there, done that.
Mm-hmm.
And the next one is, what is the most important question you can ask during an interview? That's huge, and I really would like for you to really expound on that.
Maybe
okay. In a written interview, if we will. And my final question will be, some of your strategies may not be really recognizable to a lot of job seekers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm an online entrepreneur. I'm a fairly forthright personality, so I get everything you're saying. But if you're a shy, quiet person, which I'm not,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of people are, and especially
yes.
when they go into to an environment that they consider hostile. Let's face it, most people walk into an environment considering that, you know, they're kind of like the lion and the Christians. They're just going to be eaten up. So we're going to chat again online about how someone who just is shy and just doesn't know much about networking or, you know, different things that we've talked about, how can they apply this to their job search? And, of course, I'm going to send them to your book, no question about it.
Yeah, well, I'm happy to address it. So whether it's online or another phone call, you just tell me what will work for you and your listeners, and I'm happy to accommodate.
Would you like to do another interview? Because I've got tons of questions.
Oh, I'd be happy to, anytime. Seriously? All you have to do is give me a little advance warning, and I'll get it on the calendar.
I just didn't want to take advantage of you, but if you could do another one, that would be great.
Yeah, I'm happy to do it. All we have to do is schedule it, and we'll put it in the calendar.
We will schedule it, but in the meantime, I would also like to have this put on my blog because
we're
getting a lot of questions from people on my blog saying, oh, my gosh.
Okay. You know, I'm happy to do
it. So let's do that. So, Ford, I know you've got to go. Thank you so much for your time with me here today.
It's a great pleasure, and you asked great questions, and I hope that my responses were helpful.
They were very, very helpful, and I will be posting this on my blog. And I will go ahead and get in touch with you. We'll set up another date so we can finish this up. I would like to, if it's at all possible, maybe have you read an excerpt of your book or just a couple of paragraphs.
I'd be happy to do that, too. Just pick the section you like, and we'll do it.
I will do that. So listen, everybody, thank you so much for being here. This is our Friday show has been preempted by this show because Ford's schedule just did not allow him to be here on Friday. So this is our show for the week. We will have another show next Friday as usual. And thank you so much for being here. Thank you, Ford. Have a great day. Everybody have a great weekend. And thank you very much. This is Denise Griffiths and Ford Myers. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.